It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here on, what is today, Wednesday? Yes, Wednesday. It's good to have you here. You know what, I was thinking about this today. I had a friend of mine, Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman was a big inspiration to me. He died last November and just lived a really remarkable life. And so one of the things that he talked about is that the only way to truly succeed on a consistent basis is to truly fail on a consistent basis. And if you really want to have a big, juicy life, very fulfilling life, if you want to achieve your biggest goals, you have to be able to be willing to fail on a massive scale. So his mantra, if you will, his affirmation was fail faster, fail more often, fail on a bigger scale, right? And I was thinking about that today. And that, to me, is really the art of success, is willing to go for it. And, you know, and I mean go for it in an intelligent manner. I mean, if you are, you know, trying to do something, it's going to take effort and some planning. So you got to do that on an intelligent basis. But you cannot be the kind of individual that says, well, I'll do that someday when I have this or when I achieve that. You just got to go for it. You got to go for it regardless of where you think you are now. And our first guest today is Corey Henderson. And this guy has created a community, if you will, called recordsetter.com. And, you know, he's probably seen as many successes as he's seen failure. And I guarantee you, he can attest that if you want to achieve big things, you have to be willing to fail in big ways. So I want to bring him on right now, Corey Henderson, CEO and co-founder of recordsetter.com. Recordsetter began 9 years ago in New York as a New York-based company, but now is based in Las Vegas and Los Angeles. Recordsetter has 58,000 world record videos from over 100 countries. Corey Henderson, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, and I got to ask you, now that you're out in Vegas, do you happen to live either in or close to Henderson?
we go by Henderson all the time. I always make jokes about, that's my town, but it doesn't usually work.
I mean, you know, with a name like that and a city like that, I would kind of, you know, I would purposely move there just to, you know, so, you know, it just makes it that much more memorable. But let's talk about Record Setter. Let's talk about Record Setter. And I didn't mean to cut you off there, but you and your co-founder are sitting around going, what? And I mean, tell me how Record Setter got started.
Sure. Yeah. So actually my co-founder, Dan Rollman, he began this whole crazy adventure as a Burning Man camp. So if you're familiar with Burning Man, it's, you know, a festival in the desert. And this was way back in like 2004. So they, you know, they created this camp and allowed people to come up and set any world record that they wanted. And Burning Man being Burning Man, it was, you know, just some really crazy stuff. And people were doing the most backflips on stilts, or, you know, the most blueberries fit in the belly button. And it was fun. But what he noticed was that every year they did this for 3 or 4 years, and each year they came back and people were obsessed with making sure that they were still hold the record for, you know, the fastest accordion rendition of Devil Went Down to Georgia or whatever the case was. Right. So, you know, after doing this for a couple of years, he was working in advertising at the time, and I had another tech startup. And he came to me and said, hey, do you know, I've been doing this thing. Do you think this would work on the internet as a broader thing? And this was kind of at the time that Wikipedia was really establishing itself as a force. And it was a time when, you know, video, I think the iPhone, it was starting to come out. So video cameras on cell phones was becoming a thing. And it made perfect sense to me. And we started the company at that point, and, you know, with the vision of this is a new approach to world records, and, you know, everybody on earth can be the world's best at something.
Yeah. Okay. So, I understand it correctly. So if I understand this thing correctly, you guys, because you mentioned videos, and I mentioned video in the introduction there, how does this work? Is it all video-based? In other words, is that what you use for certification of the record being set?
Yeah, exactly right. So you know, obviously people compare us to the Guinness Book, right? So one of the things we would say is, like, you know, just sort of spiritually, Guinness is something you read about, and Record Setter is something you can participate in, and we encourage that, right? So the way that we work is that we don't subjectively judge any world record category. So you could create the world record for the longest live radio broadcast about business, something like that, right? And we would never tell you that that's not worthy of a world record. That's up to you to determine. But we take world records very seriously. So we say your record has to be quantifiable. So you have to be able to measure it. It has to be breakable. So, you know, something like the world's first doesn't work. And then you have to provide video evidence. So that's the model that we've built.
Gotcha. Okay, I like that. And it's interesting. Okay, so you can't be the world's first, because it has to be somebody else. Explain that a little bit, because, I mean, if I come up and say, hey, I want to be the first world record holder of playing the accordion, you know, what, the longest person to ever play the accordion nonstop, right? Somebody's got to be first.
Well, yeah. Being first is great, and we encourage people to invent their own world records. The key is that it has to be breakable. So you couldn't do, like, the first of something doesn't count, as, because you can't break that, right? Nobody can ever be the first again. So that's, you know, one of the stories we like to tell is that when we first launched the site, you know, with any business endeavor and any website, you launch the thing, you're not really sure what's going to happen or if people are going to understand it. And I think within a day we had gotten a submission from Australia, and it was this guy named Daniel Fowler. And he had submitted a picture of himself with the most giraffe tattoos on a shoulder, and the record was one. So, you know, we giggled about that, and we were like, all right, this guy clearly gets the spirit of what we're doing. And then, you know, a couple months later, a radio station in San Diego was starting to do World Record Wednesdays, and they had, you know, they were doing records every Wednesday, which a lot of radio stations continue to do. And they said to their audience, they said, hey, we have a tattoo artist in the studio. Does anybody want to come down and break Daniel's record? And so sure enough, you know, Mike McDonald took the day off from work and got three giraffe tattoos on his shoulder just to break Daniel's record. So the spirit of this is that, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's all about creativity and competition.
Yes. Gotcha. And, you know, it's, what do you call it? It's, you know, congratulations to Mr. McDonald there. I mean, you know, he takes the time off work and he gets tatted up for, you know, what's going to take a couple hours, right?
That's right. Yeah. Entering the into world history.
Into world history. I love it. All right. So at what point, okay, because this is a startup. So at what point did you feel, okay, you know, this is starting to pick up, we're starting to work. You know, you felt fairly sure that you were on the right track. You know, how long did that take from the time that you got involved and launched it?
Yeah, so I think probably right away we knew that it was going to work from just something that people were going to be interested to do and to participate in. And we actually even launched the company as a .org because, you know, at that time we weren't really thinking about how this was going to be a big business. And then I think that was kind of the next stage, was one of the early records, one of the first 100 records or so that we ever got, was somebody did the fastest time to open a bag of Skittles and sort them by color. So, you know, it's a fun, simple, simple category. And it didn't take us very long to figure out that, like, hey, why don't we get Skittles involved and help have them help sponsor something like this? So that's, you know, we do a lot of things, but the primary way that we've made money to date is by doing kind of branded entertainment packages with companies. So that was probably a turning point, was when we got one of our first kind of paid gigs to do like a hybrid online. I think one of the biggest early ones was a fun, we did back when live streaming was still first, very new. We did a 48-hour live stream with Toyota Prius, where we set more than 200 records all inside of Toyota Priuses.
Okay, so like, for instance, what are some of the records that you guys set inside the Prius?
Oh, man, there were 200. So we had, I mean, it was a real circus act. We had, like, I think there was, like, something about the most live chickens in a Prius, and then we had, you know, the most longest time to juggle three balls in a inside of a Prius, and you know, it was super fun, and the production was extremely good on that. So it was a really fun project, and yeah, we've been off to the races, you know, ever since then.
Gotcha. All right. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, and we've sort of followed the path of a tech startup. So we raised startup capital, a little less than $3 million over the course of the company. And Chris Sacco was one of our original investors. So we sort of consider ourselves a Silicon Valley tech company, even though we are not thought of necessarily as tech first, and we're not in Silicon Valley.
Right. Gotcha. All right. So besides these corporate sponsorships like Skittles or Toyota, is there another way that you guys make money? I mean, do you guys make money from the general public? If I want to set a record, is there a fee for me to get involved and set a record?
No, there's no fees. We sell a little bit of merchandise. So we offer certificates for people that are, you know, custom certificates and things like that. But no, the bulk of our revenue is via branded entertainment, but we also do original content. So we had a book come out a couple of years ago. People, even though books are old fashioned, people still wanted a book. So we put out a book, and we have another book. It was a 2-book deal. So we have another one coming out in the future. And we've done a TV pilots, and we're working on some other television productions right now. And then we also have do different web-based video, so short-form video concepts. So we did Record Setter Kids with DreamWorks. A lot of different things.
I love it. All right, so let me ask you this. If I wanted to set a record and I wanted to, let's say, do Facebook, a live streaming, live video on Facebook or YouTube – nonstop for, let's say, 24 hours, would that be a record that I could set? Or is there one or something? Okay, so I could theoretically go for that, and we would just use the live streaming as the, quote, evidence that I'm actually doing this, right?
That's right. Yeah, we have every kind of record you could imagine. So individuals and groups and charities and companies. And we've done, I mean, the one that comes to mind is we have the longest freestyle rap, which I think is off the top of my head, I know it's more than 18 hours. So it's
no way. 18 hours of nonstop.
I'll have to look it up to get the exact number, but it's quite long, and it's a competitive category. So.
Wow. Okay. So I'm at the website. The website is recordsetter.com, and right there, on the homepage, you see Peter Durkic, if I'm pronouncing that correct, Peter Durkic.
Uh-huh.
Durkic, most stuffed animals fit in a shirt.
I believe that's a competitive category. He's the guy that likes to break everybody's record. So,
gotcha. He's just there. He's a gotcha. And then there's your fastest time to solve a Rubik's Cube. That's got to be fairly competitive. Wow. And these are definitely unique. Hold your breath. Just out of curiosity, hold your breath. Who was that by? Gene Clark.
Okay, I don't have it in front of me. I'm not sure that is it.
I just realized this Jim Wark may work for you guys. He breaks his own diving record. See if it's the guy that I think it is. William Truebridge definitely has no qualms about tackling the lightless abyss. All right, so it looks like Mr. William Truebridge set that record. All right, so is the application fairly easy? Is this something that takes, does it go through a committee? From the time that apply to set a record at recordsetter.com, what is the process like? Walk me through that.
It's actually super simple. So all you do is you have your video ready to go. You submit your video and whatever information, basic stuff about time and date and location, and then we kind of have a two-tiered system. We have a group of super user moderators and vote whether the things will be approved or denied, and then we have a small team that works for Record Setter that does all the moderation. So everything gets kind of looked over a couple of times. And then, one of the things that I would say is that the beauty of the internet is that people will love to tell you that you're wrong. So there's sometimes it'll happen that we post something. We do a fair amount of research to make sure that something's not been done before. But when we do post something, it doesn't take very long for somebody to say, hey, here's this YouTube video of somebody doing it better, longer, faster. And we will, make a correction at that point. And that happens from time to time, but our moderators are very good and very experienced.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm looking, I had to look this up since I was talking about live streaming. So I typed in live streaming in the search, explore the records thing there. Longest live stream crowd surfing is the closest thing that comes to my field. So if I did the longest live stream and did it for, I'm going to shoot for, let's say, nonstop 12 hours or something, then that might be a new record. And then somebody could come along and challenge it, and they could do it for, I guess. So here's my other question. So let's say that I set a record at recordsetter.com. I set a record for the longest live stream. And let's say it's for 12 hours. If somebody came along and did a live stream for 12 hours and 1 minute, would that be then the new record, or does it have to be significantly longer than that?
Nope. Yep. That would be the new record. We have examples of that all the time.
Gotcha. Well, and it makes sense. It keeps it a little bit, it definitely keeps it more competitive than ever, right? I mean, cause somebody could bump you off for a minute. And when you think of these world records that are set by the Olympics, seldom is it a full second. They win by just a fraction of a second, right? So it just goes to show you a fraction of a second here, a fraction of a second there. It makes a big difference, at least on the Olympics. So it should make a difference everywhere. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that reminds me, one of my favorite stories, too, is that the examples I like to use is in the Olympics, we take the pole vault as seriously as anything else, right? And you have to imagine that when that started, it was just a couple of guys in a shrub, and they were trying to say, like, oh, I bet I could jump over that shrub with a stick. And now we don't think anything of it. So, sometimes people say, oh, these records are silly. But, yeah, they start out silly. And then next thing you know, we're going to be celebrating them in the 2050 Olympics.
Yeah. No, that's a great story. That's a fantastic story. And that's got to be the same thing to the ice curling. you know, where all you're essentially doing is pushing that that weird looking bell across the ice, and it's just got to get a little bit further. You know, it's kind of a silly game, but I'm sure it's the same two guys that were trying to get over that shrub said, "Hey, let's do this."
Yeah, we humans are naturally competitive, and we see that every day. Part of the joy.
Well, you know what, and not only are we naturally competitive, but we like to celebrate the challenge. We like to celebrate overcoming. We like to celebrate the underdog. We like to celebrate victory, don't we? We, you know, it's I think part of that human spirit, that human connection, that you will be celebrated for trying. You'll be celebrated even more for winning.
That's right. And we see it globally, which is fun. So you'll upload your video, and then, you know, somebody in Estonia is going to break your record.
Okay, now we've thrown down. So and I love this, and I think we're going to have to do something at recordsetter.com and go from there. I love it. So all right, what's next? You mentioned you have another book in the works, and what's next?
Yeah, exactly. We have more sort of television and web content, original content coming. We just launched what we're calling Record Setter Pro. So it's sort of the first time that we are offering the ability for our content creators to monetize their videos.
Mm.
So, and we're basically going to become, this Record Setter Pro is essentially functions like a talent agency. So we have, you know, we have brands that come to us every day to say, oh, we're looking to set a new world record. And we just finished a year-long campaign with Doritos. And so we had a number of times during the course of the Doritos' 50th birthday or anniversary last year. And so we set 50 world records with them throughout the year. And we, at various times over the year, connected them to people in our community. So that's something that we're sort of putting together as a pro talent agency and really getting people to take that are setting records, you know, almost as a job now.
I love that. That is amazing. And I love recordsetter.com. Guys, check out recordsetter.com. Co-founder Corey Henderson, he's also the CEO. And Corey, I look forward to bringing you back on the show and talk more about some of your extraordinary records set there at recordsetter.com. And, you know, it's interesting because we're going to be shooting a pilot there in Las Vegas. So I'll have my producer hit you up for that, and maybe we can get together and do something fun there in Las Vegas if our schedules match up. And Corey, I want to say thank you so much for stopping by and sharing your information about recordsetter.com.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Good stuff there from recordsetter.com CEO Corey Henderson. And it just goes to show you a couple of different things here. You never know what becomes of a idea, right? And so this is, you know, as Corey kind of explained, it started with his co-founder, I can't remember his name, and it's kind of just organically grown into this thing. And then he got book deals and TV deals and sponsorship deals, and it just goes to show you that you can take an idea, and if you're willing to start expanding your thought, start thinking bigger, then you can say, hey, this isn't just a bunch of videos of people setting records. We can make sponsored entertainment, like you mentioned, Skittles or something else, a Prius, right? You can probably do the same thing with your stuff. Could you get a sponsor for your book? Could you get a sponsor for your podcast? Or could you get a sponsor for something else? The answer is yes, if you start changing the way you think. Change the way you think changes everything, right? All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be right back after this with my next guest, Betsy, right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com.
saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. You know, the more I start thinking about recordsetter.com, the more excited I get. I think I'm going to have to set a record there. And you guys can probably help me. Anyway, moving along, let's start small and then live big. My next guest, Betsy Paik, is an entrepreneur, award-winning business achiever, competitive weightlifter, and life strategist who hosts the popular podcast, The Art of Living Big. She's the author of the best-selling book, Becoming a Nutrition Ninja, and just released Start Small, Live Big. Betsy's mission is to help inspire others to thrive through change by starting small. She loves a good tailgate, the smell of the ocean, and relaxing with good book. She lives outside of Atlanta, Georgia, with her family. Betsy Paik, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
Well, you know what? I'm psyched to have you here because I love this idea of, start small, live big, because sometimes starting small is kind of overlooked and a lot of people poo-poo it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's this idea in our culture right now, like, you know, you hear all the time, like, go big or go home, or it's all about the hustle, 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 right? And although I think there are times where that may have its place, I think in the long run, if you really want to make lasting, substantial change, then taking small incremental steps is really the way to go. And I have seen this over and over and over again with my clients and developed a little system to help people be able to achieve that ideal.
Yeah, I like that so very much because really, in order for you, you and I both know, I mean, since you're a competitive weightlifter, you're not going to just walk in the gym and bench press 200 pounds if you've never done it before. You're going to start smaller, right?
Right, yeah.
And what happens when you go big, and I think sometimes go big, maybe we need to think big, but start small. Ooh, there's the follow-up to the book. Think big, start small, because the reality is we all need to think bigger, right? I'm a big believer that we all need to think bigger, including myself. I constantly find myself thinking small. However, you always start off a little bit smaller. You got to get used to it. You got to know what you're doing. If you want to lose 50 pounds, you're not going to do that overnight and live to tell about it. You know, everything starts off small. So I love this idea of starting small. So let's talk about this. What is a big life to you?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. Living big is different to everybody. And, you know, when I go speak at organizations, people will say to me like, well, what is a big life? And a big life is going to be different for you, Bert, than it is for me. And my big life is different right now than it was for me 6 months ago or even a year ago. So a big life is really all those different areas of your life. And what would be a 10 right now? You know, so I look at like my relationship with my husband, with my family and friends, you know, my financial life, my career, giving back to the community, my health and fitness. Where are those on a scale of 1 to 10? And what is a 10? Because a year ago, a 10 in my career was different than it is right now. So I think being able to identify that and just know that it's going to ebb and flow and change and that yours isn't going to look just like somebody else's, you know? And so find out specifically what would make your life as close to a 10 on all those areas, and you'll have your own areas, but how you can make that a 10, that's living big.
Yeah,
and I have a little litmus test that I use.
Okay.
I identified like four feelings that really bring me happiness. Like when I feel success, when I look at the times where I felt really successful, I had four things that always come up for me. One is like I felt joyful, right? So I felt like happy. I felt abundant. Like I felt abundant. Like I felt like there was a lot. Even if it was with my friends, I felt a lot of love, a lot of joy. You know, maybe it was a lot of experiences, a lot of money. Like whatever it was, abundant is one of mine. Free is the other. So my big life is different from your big life, and I'm free to say my truth and be my truth and not worry about keeping up with the Joneses, right? So not worried about my neighbor. And the last one is rooted. And to me, rooted is like roots provide nourishment, right? That's how it feeds the plant. And that's also deep and strong and is stable. So when I look at my like litmus test of what makes something big for me, what is a big experience or leading my life to a 10, I look at those four things. Is it rooted? Is it abundant? Am I free? And is it joyful? And so for me, that's just sort of a good guideline.
Yeah, I think that's a great guideline. I think, you know, and this comes something, this is important because what you're, it sounds like to me what you're talking about is your values, right? And
yeah, sure.
I think, and I think that some of us overlook that step because it seems so, I don't know, cliche, you got to, you know, and, but if you know you, your values, you know who you are, and if you know who you are, you can come from a place of strength. If, you know, because, you know, one of the ways I measure success is how transparent I'm willing to be. How much of my pride am I willing to strip away so I don't have those pretenses that I used to have when I was, you know, in my 30s or younger or whatever, right? And so one of the great things about aging is that we give a crap we give a crap less or we care so much less about what other people's opinions are, and we start to really enjoy our life. And I think when you're young and dumb, you get caught up into other people's opinions. And even though, you know, a lot of us go around saying, oh, I don't care what anybody thinks, deep inside we do. And therefore, that's why we don't take the risks we do. And that's why we dress the way we dress. And that's why we have the jobs that we have, is because we care about other people's opinions. Later on in life, when you decide, this is my life, screw everybody else, you start to really focus in on your core values and who you are, and you come to grips with that. And I think the faster you do that, the more joyful and more abundant life you'll have.
Yeah, yeah, I think absolutely. Well, it's that tribe, right? So biologically, we want to be part of the tribe. And I think that's what stops us from living a big life, because living a big life is being true to you. What's your big life? And that stops people. So people, you know, you hear about it all the time. Like, well, I mean, that's when it happened for me, right? In my 40s, when I said, wait a minute, like, am I really living the life I want to have? No, I'm not. And so I think it takes people sort of a while, you know, to say, wait a second, this isn't really how I want to live. And what, how do I want to live? And that moment of reflection, you know, lots of times people will see that as a midlife crisis or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's that moment of reflection where you really start looking, wait, what's good for me is really what's going to be good for the tribe.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Because here's the thing about tribes. You want people who have your common values, you know, like-minded thinking is kind of the phrase that people are most familiar with. And you want to repel those who don't, you know, who don't like your vibe, right? You don't want people, you don't want everybody in your tribe. And if you look around, it doesn't matter who somebody is. There are people who love Kim Kardashian. They think she is just incredible. And there's a lot of people who don't like Kim Kardashian. And, you know, and I think that she's personally okay with people who love her and or hate her, because no matter what, she gets paid.
Yeah, yeah. And she's who she is. She's okay with that. You know? Yeah. And I think this is what stops us, right? So this is sort of how I came to this whole idea. I have a daughter who is now in high school, but at the time she was heading into middle school. And, you know, that's the time where you want to be part of the tribe, right? And right. she started having anxiety. The school would call me and say, like, you know, she's hyperventilating. And I thought to myself, like, of course she is. She's in middle school. Like, middle school stinks. But what I found was that she was truly having anxiety attacks. And, you know, it didn't take long before she realized it was really embarrassing to have the school call. And she would run into the bathroom and I would just get these, like, heart-wrenching text messages. And so, you know, I brought her to a doctor and they explained, you know, it's her amygdala, right? It's your freeze, fight, or flight response. And I was working with clients at the time, like life coaching clients, and I found sort of a similar thing. You know, they would identify what a big life was to them, but then to actually start taking those steps, like the incremental steps to live that big life, they just felt like a weird resistance. And the doctor described my daughter's anxiety to her, saying, you have an army inside your brain, and your army is built to keep you safe. And your army is just really strong, and so we have to teach it that you're safe. And that resonated so much to me because I thought, oh, my gosh, this is what my clients are having. Like, I have to teach them that they're safe. What I'm asking them to do to get to their big life is so outside of their comfort zone that their amygdala is saying, like, wait a minute, like, don't. And so right. I started doing with them what I did with my daughter, which was to break things down into teeny, teeny steps. And so, you know, lots of times we think, like, small incremental steps is what gets you to a goal, or, you know, you got to break down an elephant. But I'm talking like a micro step. So, you know, I had a client that was really successful. You know, she was in the corporate world, super successful. She came to me. She wanted to add health and fitness into her life. And, you know, we talked about all sorts of things and decided together that she would try to walk 3 days a week because that seemed pretty simple and low stress. And at the end of the week when I called her and I asked her, did you do it? She was like, no, like, I'm busy. I had stuff to do. You know, I'm very important. And I totally recognized that as the same thing that would happen to my daughter, right? So there'd be a substitute teacher, like something new. I can't handle it. I can't do it. There's a resistance. And so I said to her, like, next week, I don't want you to work out. I just want you to put your workout clothes on. So don't work out. Just put your workout clothes on 3 days a week. I mean, like, I could almost hear her think, like, you know, am I paying this woman to tell me this? But she did it. And we, at the end of the week, I called her and I asked her, you know, how did it go? And she said, well, of course I did it. That was too small not to do. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the key. And so the following week, I said, put your workout clothes on. But when the news comes on, I just want you to march in place in front of the TV. And she said, okay. And at the end of the week, I called her and asked, how did it go? And she said, I didn't do it. I did it twice. The third time, I just decided to go for a walk. And I was like, oh, man, right? So I was like, action comes first, then motivation. So we get these ideas, right? We go and hear a speaker or we listen to a motivational thing on YouTube or whatever, and we get these, like, great ideas. Well, if you have that great idea, you are supposed to do that thing. Like, that is for you. You actually can do it. But a few days later, it kind of wears off, right? And so you start having that push and pull with your brain, with your amygdala going, don't do that. Like, that's not something we do. And so if you can break it down into, like, a micro step, you can sort of tiptoe past your amygdala and start making progress. And once you start making progress, then the motivation really kicks in and you're off to the races.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant because how did you say it? Tiptoe by your
tiptoe past your amygdala.
Amygdala, yeah. You know, it's those little things that sometimes we have to just trigger. We have to, what do you call it? Trick ourselves. Right. I mean, this is the same thing as I remember when I years ago, I had made a commitment. And so in order for me to be able to work out the amount of time that I needed to work out because I was getting ready to do something and not miss any family time and or work time and all that, I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And you know, so what I started doing is I had put my alarm clock on the other side of the room. So the alarm clock would go off, and of course I have to get up, and now that I'm up, I stay up. And so that's what I'm, my point being, that's what you did with her, is you kind of tricked her into this. And I love this idea of getting, just like you said, tiptoeing by, past your amygdala there, and tricking yourself into doing these little small things. And what's interesting too is that it's interesting with your client's case there, that going for a walk was too big, but then she whined a little bit about putting on my clothes is too small. And and then when you got her to the next step, which is march in place, she did that for a couple of days, and then she felt good enough to walk outside.
Right.
And I love this idea. I mean, that to me is that what a great demonstration of that, you know, going from small to big, right? I love that. What a great story. I love that one, Betsy. That's a fantastic story, because really, right there, for everybody listening, whether you're having, you know, whether you want to change something in your career, your business, maybe it's, you know, furthering your education, maybe it's a relationship, everybody can do these really tiny micro steps into bigger steps.
Exactly. Yeah. Because sometimes you don't have to do the micro steps for very long, and then it gets to more little jumps, you know, and so it kind of builds on itself.
Right. And I think what happens is this. I think that, you know, it's almost, again, for us humans, when we're making these steps, these changes, part of the risk that, you know, the unverbalized risk or thought is that if I make this change, the world will collapse. Something along those lines, right? If I start working out every day, then people are going to expect me to work out all the time, and my world changes too much, too quick, and you know, the universe as I know it collapses, and I can't do that. But I can put on my gym clothes, because really there's no pressure there. I'm still inside my house. Life is still good. You know, the expectations aren't there yet. And so she was able to build enough confidence, realizing that, hey, I can put on my gym clothes, nothing changes. I can march in place, nothing really changes, you know, and I can, you know, and then finally she decided, you know what, maybe if I can march in place, I can march in place outside and walk around.
Right. And, you know, it's biologically, think about it. You know, we don't want to get eaten. We don't want to get attacked by a tiger. And so if we do something outside of the norm, we don't know, our brain doesn't know if we're going to be safe. So even though we think to ourselves rationally, like, yeah, I can walk up the street, but our brains in the back of our head are really shutting that down. And when that amygdala fires, it actually shuts down the front cortex of your brain with chemicals. And so you don't have as much access to rational thought. So you know you should go for a walk, but your brain is going like, I don't know if I'm going to get killed. I don't know if there's a tiger, but if I can slowly trick my brain, you know, I can slowly say to my brain, we're safe, we're safe, we're safe. Then all of a sudden your brain's like, go ahead, go up, go to the end of the neighborhood. You know, it doesn't care. So you don't have a resistance anymore. So I always tell people, like, it's not your fault. You know, there's biological processes working against you in many cases. So we just have to work with it. And so that you can start to really do those things that you want.
Yeah, I think this is a great, I hope that everybody picks up on this, because really this is a life-changing event here. And I hope that people will get the aha here. Let's talk about this thing that you have. You call it the CHASE framework. Talk about what this is. How did you discover this?
Yeah, so, you know, as I was working with my client that I just described and all my other clients, I kept thinking, this is, like, I became sort of obsessed with it, right? So, like, trying it out with different people, talking to people that were successful, and really breaking down, like, what was the moment that you started to work towards this goal, you know, and trying to figure that out. And I wanted some way to be able to help other people create their own small steps without having to call me, right? So you don't need me anymore. You can actually just do this yourself, but to have a framework. And so I created this framework, and I call it CHASE, and it's inside my book, but you can download the form for free on my website. But basically what it is, CHASE, it stands for Create, Help, Attain, Start, and Evaluate. And really what I know from talking to people is that, you know, clients would come, what kind of changes would you like to see in your life? And almost always they would say, well, I don't want my boss to, like, I want my boss to appreciate me, or I don't want my husband to not recognize anymore how hard I work at work and how hard I work at home. And, you know, I want my kids to be more, like, they'd name all this stuff that they didn't have. So they never were really clear on what they did want. So that's like the biggest thing. If people could get like mighty, mighty clear on what you actually do want, like we talked about in the beginning, all those different areas of your life, break them down, figure out what would be a 10. What do you really, really want? And so in that CHASE framework, that's what I have you do. At the top of the worksheet, you write down where you are right now. So, you know, what's happening with you right now? And maybe you want a better relationship with your husband, but right now it stinks, right? So at the top of the worksheet, you would write down, like, I don't get along with my husband. He drives me nuts. You know, I hope he doesn't come home tonight, whatever it is. And at the bottom of the worksheet is where you're going to write the vision. Like, what would be great? Because many times we think we're working towards something, but we don't even know what would be great. Like, what would be great is if, you know, my partner had hobbies that I could be involved in. They were interesting. They liked to have discussions. We did activities together. We shared interests. We had friends together. You know, like, name what would that really look like? And in the middle of that worksheet, so at the top, you know, I have where I am. At the bottom, I have where I'm going. And in the middle, I have my clients just set a timer. So setting a timer for 10 minutes will make you, force you to push past your amygdala that will try to stop you from coming up with small steps. So I just want you to name all the small steps that could take you from the top of the worksheet where you are to the bottom where you want to go. And these can be like ridiculous things. It doesn't mean you have to do it. It doesn't mean anybody has to see your worksheet. You just have to write things out. And what I know from talking to people is when they get to minute 7 or 8, they start to think of other crazy things. And I say just write them down, even if it doesn't make sense, because it's a block and it'll clear the block and then you'll come up with new ideas. So when you get done that 10 minutes, you should have a whole bunch of crazy ideas, some good, some bad, some you'll keep, some you might throw out. And then the next step is H, which is help. So I always say, you know, anytime you have a to-do list at the beginning of the month or when you're looking at your CHASE worksheet, where can you delegate? Just circle all the areas you can delegate. Get help. Just pass those off. So, you know, maybe if you're trying to build a better relationship with your spouse, for the few months you're really focused on this, you get a housekeeper. You know, like maybe that's some place you get help so it frees up time. So look at that. Attain is really where maybe you have to attain something new, some new knowledge. Maybe one of your steps is really a project in itself, you know? So how can you break that down? What do you need there? And then S is start. So you have momentum, right, from doing the worksheet. You have some momentum. So the very next day, do one small step. So just put it in your calendar. I'm going to do this. And 5 minutes. Have it be 5 minutes or less. So, you know, maybe you want to create better meals for dinner. Create a Pinterest board for meals. It doesn't even mean you have to put anything in the board. You don't have to look up a recipe, but just start. Just do something to tell your brain you're on your way. And then the last part is E for evaluate. Something that I see over and over again is people start, like they'll start a resolution, right? And so by the week 3 of January, they're not even on track. But they haven't evaluated. You know, think of your life as like a science experiment, and every Sunday night, evaluate what worked this week, what didn't work, what could I add in, how could I continue to expand on the things that are really going well. So use that time to evaluate the airline pilot, and he flies from LA to Atlanta, where I live. And he said if the nose of his airplane is off by just 1%, he'd end up in South Carolina. So over that long amount of time, right, you get off course and you go way off course. So he's constantly adjusting, constantly looking at the controls, looking at the computer. So we have to do that in our lives too, because otherwise there's this compound effect, right? So you already have ways that you do things and systems that you do things. And if your life isn't the way you like it, it's because you're doing things that aren't supporting what you want. So evaluate every week so that you can see, is this really going the way I want? And that way you can really start to have huge jumps and changes in momentum towards living your big life.
You know what? And let me add this. Here's the takeaway from your pilot example. And this is something that's really big. But people language it differently, such as, well, I'm not sticking to my diet. It's not really that big of a deal because I'm having two Frappuccinos a day, but I'm only supposed to be having two. And it's that, you know, so back to that pilot example where if you're just off by a little bit, a fraction over time can completely, what do you call it? Put you in the wrong place, right? Instead of going to LA,
right.
You know, whatever. Instead of going to LA, you're now, you know, you're now in some other place, not even remotely to California. So my point being is that one of the things that we do as humans when we try to, I guess, not hold ourselves too accountable, is we say things like it's not a big deal, or you know, I'm not going to worry about it, or you know, it's just a small, you know, little thing. But it's those small little things that are really big things, right? I mean, if you hold yourself accountable, really accountable, and you just say to yourself, listen, I'm only gonna do this. This is what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to make 10 phone calls today, and I only made 7, then you should make yourself get up and make those other 3 phone calls, even if it's at 3 o'clock in the morning, and leave voicemail messages. And by the way, out of the 10 phone calls, those 3 will probably be returned because it's at 3 o'clock in the morning and people are wondering, what the flip are you calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning? But my point being is that it's these little things, these little changes that over time add up to massive changes. And that's the takeaway that I got from your pilot story there. And it's so critical because you can apply that to your health, your wealth, your relationships. You know, I think that one of the things that, again, I've been married for 30 years, going on 31 years, and one of the things that I think has helped our relationship continue to grow is that, you know, we go out on a date on a rate, you know, every week. But more importantly, I have found that when my wife and I are honest with each other, and what I mean by that is, you know, when you're living with somebody for a long time, you know, you sometimes don't express yourself the way you really would if maybe if you were just, I don't know, your first year of marriage or maybe still dating. I'm not saying to be rude. I'm saying just to be honest and say, you know what, I really don't like tuna casserole. Or I don't like it when you come home late and you don't call me or text me. It's these little things, again, over time, all of a sudden has this massive impact.
Yeah, huge impact. And think about it either way. So if you're doing things that are on the negative side of your goal, it's going to have an impact away from your goal. But if you're making little small steps, you know, if you always get a Venti Starbucks, get a Grande. That little step will start to create momentum. So it's not about like I'm going cold turkey on my coffee. Maybe it's you're just changing the way you order your coffee. So those little steps can go either way, right? It can help you or it can hurt you. Yep.
All right. So
and
let's
lots
talk
of
times
I'll talk to people. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Because we're almost out of time. So let me ask you this. In your experience, what is the one thing that you think holds people back from reaching their dreams or their goals?
Yeah, clarity. Clarity, hands down.
Amen,
sister. If I talk to somebody, and they know what they want, and specifically, I don't even care if you know how. You don't have to know how. You just have to know what you want, because then it's in your brain, and you'll start noticing different ways that you can start to get to that goal. But people that come to me and they're wishy-washy or they don't know, they're never going anywhere that they want to go because they're not even clear. So clarity, clarity, clarity.
Well, you know what, and I want to, again, say amen to that. It's so important to be clear, and I think you gave the example with your CHASE framework, you know, that a lot of people get, you know, hey, they kind of know what they don't want, but they have no idea what they do want, and therefore they're stuck. Mm-hmm. And being stuck, not knowing what you want, I think is so painful. It's torturous, you know, because you're yeah. not motivated. You can get depressed fairly easy. You know, you don't see any kind of clear exit strategy or starting point. So this thing about clarity is so important. Clarity is power. And what's interesting is when you're clear as to what you want, all of a sudden things line up. People come into your mm-hmm. life. These coincidences happens that
totally.
All of a sudden, yeah, that make things happen. I mean, it's just, you know, you finally decide, hey, I'm going to go do this instead. And bam, somebody that hasn't maybe talked to you in a few months calls you up and says, hey, do you know anybody who's looking for this, that, or the other thing? And that's you. So it happens. Mm-hmm. Clarity is such a powerful thing. Let me ask you this. Are you a big believer or do you use visualization or vision boards, things of that nature?
Yeah. So I'm big fan of visualization and affirmation. I really tried to limit. I do it once a day. Just for about 5 minutes, because our brain likes novelty. And sometimes I'll talk with people and they'll think they got to visualize for like 20 minutes and your brain's not going to like it anymore. So your brain likes novelty. I lots of times put on music in the morning, like really pump up music, and your body language speaks to your brain. So, I mean, I probably look like a hot fool in here. I jump up and down. I put my hands in the air, you know, just so excited because that vision I have is here. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's not
yeah.
like, oh, I'm working towards this thing. It's, I am so excited because this is here. And wow, when I can really get in the feeling of that, things really start to happen quickly.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I think that visualization, I like what you said there. We love novelty. One of the things that I do when I visualize myself is I visualize something, you know, and because you're right, the brain gets bored quickly, or we do, whatever, however you mm-hmm. want to phrase that. But one of the things that I like to do with my visualization is incorporate other people in it. So, you know, might be maybe one of my, might be a celebrity that I want to hang out with. And so I will visualize, let's say, me driving in my Tesla with Matt Damon, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so that, you know, and so that's kind of a fun way that I use that to break up to make it more novel, right? To make it a little bit more
yeah.
exciting, because the more you can feel it, the more I think the faster you'll achieve it.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you're in the feeling and you're excited, then the meantime doesn't seem like a long time.
That's right. I like that so much. Betsy, Paik,
yeah.
we're out of time. It's been so much fun having you here. The book, again, is The Art of Living Big. And
that's the podcast.
The Art of Living Big. Yeah. And the book is called Starting Small.
Start Small, Live Big.
Start Small, Live Big, available on Amazon. Betsy, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to have you back again.
Thanks again.
Good stuff there from Betsy Paik. And, you know, I should have asked her for her website. I believe her website is Betsy Paik, rhymes with cake, but you spell it with a P as in profit, BetsyPake.com. You can find her, her team, her books, and her more information about her there. As always, I'm so glad you stopped by. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I enjoyed myself. It was a lot of fun between Corey Henderson and Betsy Paik. It's been a lot of fun. Please go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/BertJMartinez. Subscribe today. Get yourself some free food from Chili's. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.